after the protest and the riot up in King's Cross, they brought those that they put into the paddy wagons here to the cells, and they crammed many of them into these very, very small 2 metre by 5 metre spaces.
I think walking into those rooms where you've got, you know, the printing on the bricks and that people were in these cells, you can feel the trauma. But I think reclamation and transformation is always a good thing.
Education at the place where things happened is the most powerful that you can get.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Pending Ghanaian law would make coming out a crime. Czech Parliament swaps marriage for adoption rights. And Sydney opens the world's largest queer museum. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 2nd. 2024. Ghana's LGBTQ people are waiting to see whether just coming out will soon be a crime. The legislature unanimously approved the horrific Promotion of Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values Bill on February 28th. Queer allies could be charged with willful promotion, sponsorship, or support of LGBTQ plus activities, and face 3 to 5 years in prison. If the so-called promotion targets minors, advocates can be jailed for up to 10 years. Knowingly allowing same-gender sexual activity on properties they own, occupy, or manage could get a person a 6-year prison term. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is already illegal in the West African nation, punishable by up to 3 years behind bars. The new bill makes it 5. It also encourages citizens to report suspected LGBTQ people or their supporters to the police for what it calls necessary action. The legislation received almost universal backing from Christian, Muslim, and Ghanaian traditional leaders. A few opposition party MPs were met with jeers for proposing community service and counseling instead of prison terms, and they were shouted down. To United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Türk, the legislation is profoundly disturbing. Not surprisingly, courageous groups in Ghana advocating for queer equality, several global human rights groups, and a number of Western leaders have roundly condemned the bill's passage. Along with Uganda's draconian Anti-Homosexuality Act, the new anti-queer legislation in Ghana will be among the harshest in Africa if President Nana Akufo-Addo signs it into law. He has avoided taking a public stand on the highly charged issue. Most observers do expect him to sign it.
Opening civil marriage to same-gender couples was rejected by the lower house of the Czech Republic on February 28th. A so-called compromise bill tweaking registered partnerships by allowing those couples to adopt each other's biological children passed in the lower house by a vote of 118 to 33, with 23 abstentions. That right was not included in the partnership option that passed in 2006. An effort to grant queer couples complete adoption rights equivalent to those of heterosexual married people failed. It required 93 votes to pass, but only got 66 votes, with 54 against and 64 abstentions. People in registered partnerships in the Central European country do not have the right to jointly own property or even get survivors' pensions. Even the compromise queer couples' rights bill is predicted to face an uphill battle in the more politically conservative Senate. Lawmakers in the Czech Republic are significantly lagging behind public opinion. The most recent polls show widespread support for marriage equality.
All pediatric gender-affirming health care in the state of Indiana has come to a halt. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals lifted a preliminary injunction issued by a lower district court that has stopped enforcement of a ban on treatment. Republican Governor Eric Holcomb signed the Republican-dominated legislature's bill in April 2023. It had originally been scheduled to take effect in July. As of the February 27th appeals court ruling, providing reversible puberty blockers and hormone therapies to transgender patients under the age of 18 is outlawed. This, regardless of consultation with medical professionals, parents, or legal guardians. The American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana is challenging the constitutionality of the measure in that lower U.S. District Court. They represent four transgender young people and their families, a doctor, and a healthcare clinic. The judge there had issued a temporary ban on the law's enforcement, believing that the constitutional challenge would be successful. An ACLU press statement calls the appeals court action beyond disappointing. The organization vows to continue to challenge this law until it is permanently defeated and Indiana is made a safer place to raise every family.
Fighting state bans on gender-affirming health care for minors is the right thing to do, according to the American Psychological Association. The Council of Representatives of the world's largest group of psychologists condemned all such bans in a February 28th resolution. With one abstention, the staggering vote of 153-9 advances the organization's support of pediatric gender-affirming health care. The resolution says those bans disregard the comprehensive body of psychological and medical research supporting the positive impact of gender-affirming treatments. It calls the bans a direct threat to the mental health and emotional well-being of transgender, gender-diverse, and non-binary youth. The psychologists warn, misinformation further creates distress and confusion for families and loved ones of transgender, gender-diverse, and non-binary individuals. Practitioners are encouraged to unite in their support for access to psychological and all appropriate healthcare services and treatment for transgender, gender-diverse, and non-binary individuals. The American Psychological Association counts more than 157,000 members, including clinicians, researchers, consultants, educators, and students.
New South Wales police officers will be marching in this year's Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, but not in uniform and not without controversy. Friction over the police participating in the parade is traditional. The event actually commemorates Australia's Stonewall, the peaceful 1978 LGBTQ Pride March that turned into a police riot. Officers have been marching since 1998 as a gesture of respect and support. However, the issue heated up in the past few weeks after the murders of popular Australian TV reporter Jesse Baird and his flight attendant boyfriend Luke Davies. Their bodies were found buried under rocks and debris on a rural property. Baird's active-duty police officer ex-boyfriend has been charged with shooting and killing the couple in what authorities describe as a crime of passion. The Mardi Gras board at first banned the police contingent entirely from marching in the March 2nd parade, but relented after New South Wales Police Force Commissioner Karen Webb protested. Webb wrote in a statement, "I am delighted that our LGBTQIA+ officers, as well as our other police who are allies and supporters, will be allowed to march this year, as they have done for the past 20 years. She acknowledged the agreement to march in plain clothes in consideration of current sensitivities. The group Pride in Protest criticized the board for what it called cracking under police pressure and is prioritizing appeasing the state government and the police commissioner over the safety and wishes of the queer community. Australian federal police officers opted not to march this year.
Finally, Washington State's legislature has stripped decades-old lewd conduct laws off the books. Those statutes covering venues that serve liquor were cited in sudden disruptive late January raids on several queer night spots in Seattle. The lewd conduct charges amounted to a few patrons wearing jockstraps at a leather bar and the exposed nipple of a bartender at another establishment. Openly gay Democratic Majority Leader of the Washington State Senate, Jamie Pedersen, added a provision to the Strippers Bill of Rights that included repeal of those antiquated lewd conduct laws. Adult entertainment industry performers have been lobbying for legislation to improve their working conditions for many months. Strippers and erotic dancers also wanted their venues to serve liquor to bolster profit margins, which would lower their fees and protect their jobs. The measure passed the Senate by a vote of 29-20 on February 21st. There were doubts that it was going to be approved in the House because Speaker Lori Jenkins had expressed opposition to allowing strip clubs to serve alcohol. However, the inclusive bill passed in the lower chamber on February 27th by a comfortable margin of 58-36. The bill now awaits Democratic Governor Jay Inslee's signature. To quote Rich Smith of the alternative media outlet The Stranger, it would free the nipple and the jockstrap at gay bars, allowing the LGBTQ plus community to go-go dance without the fear of the goon squad busting in with flashlights and cameras.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 2nd, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you just see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? And ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind when I'm gone to Carolina in my mind?
This is Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Reclaiming and repurposing relics from a painful past is a delicate business. Words like queer and dyke have been turned into positives by many LGBTQ people, but they still trigger traumatic memories for others. Reclamation is the name of the game for Sydney, Australia's newest community landmark. It's a venue that's keeping history alive while respecting the feelings of the ones who lived it. This Way Out Sydney correspondent Barry McKay takes us there with a warning that his report contains disturbing descriptions of abuse.
The new LGBTQI+ Qtopia Museum in Sydney, Australia, was opened on the 23rd of February by Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. In terms of square metres, it's the largest queer museum in the world, and has opened just in time for this year's annual Sydney Mardi Gras. Here's a few words from the Prime Minister's opening speech.
For generations, the queer community has played such a key role in shaping this great city of Sydney. I have been marching since the 1980s, actually, a long time. And today, as I went through the magnificent Qtopia facilities, my thoughts went back to the 78ers who marched, but also to people who I grew up with politically. The last time I was standing on this stage, it was to advocate for a yes vote in the referendum. Social change doesn't happen in a straight line, but it does happen. And history does move forward as progressives, I believe that, and it moves forward in a way which is more inclusive. And when it does that, the beneficiaries of that social change aren't just from the direct community who are included in a better way. The society as a whole benefits from greater inclusion and recognition that the great strength of this great nation is our diversity.
And with that, Mr. Albanese announced a grant of $1.5 million of federal money to the museum.
So today I also have the great privilege of announcing a Commonwealth contribution of $1.5 million for the further upgrade.
I spoke with CEO of Qtopia, Greg Fisher, who tells me that the idea for the museum originated 20 years ago with the concept of an AIDS museum, which was later expanded to be a centre for queer history and culture.
Our goal is to tell stories through exhibitions, performances and through community engagement programs focusing on education. We have joined with the Department of Education to create curricula-aligned programs so that schools can come in here and we can teach the next generation about inclusiveness, identity and love.
Ian Roberts, Australia's first professional rugby league footballer to come out in the 1990s, is a member of the board of Qtopia.
I'm big on education. I do, you know, education, education, education. I think that's our biggest hope for changing perceptions in this, in the inclusion diversity space. We've been working, Qtopia, we've been working alongside the New South Wales Education Department, having curriculum and syllabus written for primary school or high school, so there'll be, you know, excursions and incursions. That's what really validates us, that those education programs. The corporate world have been, you know, there's corporate programs also we're running out. We also have three, you know, like theatre spaces for creative artists. We have one here in the main building, which holds about 70 people. We have another one across the road from here, the substation theatre, which holds about 50 people.
And that was a toilet block at one stage, wasn't it?
The toilet block is in front of the substation. They are right next to each other. The toilet block, we also have that as an exhibition too. That's kind of the 18-plus area for, you know, the sexy part of Qtopia. The main building is about education and our history and the culture. But when that opens, that really is a sexy, like, for all the subcultures around beats and just, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. There's a tribute to the famous Chof Man as well, which I've been, like, fortunate enough to have spoken to him a number of times now, and I got to tell you, he's such an icon, but he's such a sweetheart. He's such a sweetheart. So he's really is one of Sydney's icons.
Chof Man, and there's a long story behind his nickname, was at the opening, and I asked him about his impressions of the museum space, which is now in the former Darlinghurst police station.
Could I get your impressions of Qtopia?
Yeah, the exhibition areas are really, really very good, extremely good, and I'm very happy with the way they've compiled the history and so on, so yes.
Trough Man, or Barry Charles, was one of the original 78ers who was central to the story of the original 1978 Mardi Gras, Australia's Stonewall, when 53 people were arrested and held overnight at the old Darlinghurst police station, the building in which the museum is housed and has now been repurposed. I asked him if he'd been arrested that night.
Not even that, I'm afraid. I chickened out when I got chased by a police officer halfway through the parade in College Street, City.
Yeah.
So before it even got up to King's Cross, I was out of it, and I was traumatised by just that
part. What do you think about this being reclaimed as a space now?
It's troublesome for a lot of people. A lot of us are celebrating the fact that we've taken over the space, but also there are others who, for whom that will be very difficult for them to walk in here. I know one chap in particular who he had such a terrible experience that night, and he was very badly injured, and he was, you know, couldn't work for quite a long time. He had PTSD, and he still suffers from it. If he needs to talk about the issue these days, he bursts into tears, and that's 40-odd years later. So it shows you that the trauma that was caused that night by the police. So for some people, it'll take them quite a while to adjust to coming here. And, yeah, so that's all I can really say.
The history of the night of the first Mardi Gras in 1978 is very central to the choice of location of the museum. It had operated as a police station from when it was first built in 1899 until 1987. During the 1970s and the 1980s, it had the reputation as being one of the roughest police stations in the state of New South Wales. I spoke to Qtopia historian George Savoulis.
During that time, it was just due to its location, there were, and the nature of the population around the police station, the LGBTQI community was flourishing here. And due to the laws of the time, many of the community were brutalised in this particular station.
During the 1978 Mardi Gras, what happened here that night?
Oh, that was an eventful night. After the protest and the riot up in King's Cross, they brought those that they put into the paddy wagons here to the cells, and they crammed many of them into these very, very small 2 metre by 5 metre spaces. In one of them, we had over 14 or 15 women in one, and they'll kept there overnight with only a bucket. It wasn't the most ideal situation.
Space. And those cells are still here in their original condition?
They are here in their original condition, and they still had the original tiles. And if anyone comes to visit, you'll see cracks and some markings on the tiles, especially around head height, because the police here had the reputation of being very, very rough with any inmate, where they would intimidate and...
Bash?
Bash is a good word. I don't want to say it, but bash. They would bash them into the walls.
Yeah.
Something that used to happen here and unique to this station is called the Darlow Drop, where two police would come into a cell and they would take someone from our community and throw them as hard as they could towards the ceiling to see what shape they'd make when they hit the ground. So these sort of atrocities were occurring for years and years and years.
And there was a person called Peter Murphy who they singled out.
Yes, that was in the night of 1978. Unfortunately, they made an example of him and they took him into one of the cells where they could hear, probably on the side of the road outside on Forbes Street. And unfortunately, poor Peter was brutalised for a good 7-8 hours. So, and his screams, the police wanted the people outside to hear his screams.
Because there was a huge crowd outside saying, let them go, let them go.
That's right, yeah. It's right. And they were reacting to it. Unfortunately, poor Peter, I mean, what happened to him was, you know, they wouldn't even let medics in when the community outside could hear the pain and they were calling for, you know, a doctor to go in and check on him, and they wouldn't let him in. Eventually, sometime close to dawn, they did allow, and they found him in a horrific state.
Elaine Chulkowski is the chair of the board of Qtopia and explains what will first go on display at the museum for visitors.
Well, we're kicking off, of course, with what's gone before. So our First Nations LGBTQ 78ers who, you know, were imprisoned in here and beaten up in these cells here. It's sort of about what's gone before so people get the backstory and then they can understand where we're going and what's for the future.
I asked Qtopia CEO Greg Fisher about those people who still suffer trauma from being held in the former police cells back in 1978 and are reticent to return as the cells are still in their former condition.
I say that we have taken on this with a great deal of acknowledgement and sensitivity. We haven't ignored the feelings of the 78ers and those before and after who are maltreated in this place. We've made sure that we've opened with the story of it. We've made sure that we've opened with an exhibition about the apology that was given by the former Commissioner Mick Fuller. And I think it's an important exhibition which will be permanent so that future generations will understand on whose shoulders they stand for their own freedoms and understand and respect that. And I think that in situ education, that is education at the place where things happened, is the most powerful that you can get.
I spoke to a few other people there on the day and asked their thoughts.
What about the reclamation of the space as a place of trauma to a place to retell these stories?
I think that that's a good thing. But I think walking into those rooms where you've got, you know, the printing on the bricks and that people were in these cells, is it does feel, you can feel the trauma. But I think I think ultimately that it is a reclamation. I think reclamation and transformation is always a good thing.
Look, I'm totally overwhelmed. It's fantastic, really. That, and so ironic, you know, that this was ground zero as far as Sydney's transformation of the gay community from punitive to celebratory. This is where it really was centred.
It's such a great reclamation of that space, isn't it?
Yeah, it brings me to tears to talk about it.
How do you feel about this being repurposed?
I think it's great. A lot of the 78ers who weren't in here don't believe it's the right place, but I do. I think it's the best place. My background is libraries and archives, so I think we should always have these sort of places to remember things, so I think it's the best thing.
I asked Greg Fisher about getting a feeling for what happened in those old preserved cells.
You know, whilst we get a feel for it, you know, I respect the fact that those people who are there have more than a feeling. They've got a trauma associated with it. So for some, it's going to be a while before they will feel any sense of healing. For others, they've already been here a number of times and have already felt that sense of healing as we have changed this place from being a police station to being a place of storytelling for the queer community. So we've reclaimed it. And I hope that one day they feel confident enough to come in here. But I also respect the fact that if some of them will say, we will never step foot in there again. I respect that, but I also say that for future generations to fully understand the basis on which their freedoms lie, this is a very important place.
More on Sydney's new queer museum, Qtopia, next time on This Way Out.
I'm pretty impressed and I'm fascinated because I lived through all this.
There's 18 exhibitions that look at HIV/AIDS, looks at pre-colonial First Nations history. It looks at the journey from cross-dressing to trans and the journey from illegality to legality.
And I think there are other stories that we haven't even begun to tell yet.
I'm Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by David Hunt and Tanya Kane Perry and produced by Brian DeShazer. Barry McKay reported from Sydney. David Rose, the Electric Light Orchestra, and the Tom Robinson Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Lee Sloan of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KBOO Corvallis, Albany, Hood River, Oregon, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, CKDU Halifax, Nova Scotia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.